This is Derek from the Sometimes Geek Podcast, and you're listening to Play Comics on the Brain Trust Network.
And welcome to Play Comics, the show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material, and today movies as well. I'm Chris, and today I'm joined by Kieran Shiak of the entire Good Egg Podcast Network. Kieran, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm happy to be here talking about not just my favorite superhero game, but my favorite game of all time.
I mean, that's some high praise. So I'm really happy to get to know this one, because I've had a copy sitting on my shelf and just haven't gotten around to it yet.
It's just so good in like every single way. Even the stuff that people say they don't like, I still love, which might be like a nostalgia thing, but I'm sure we'll get into all that.
Yeah. First, we need to talk about where this movie comes from. Obviously, you're a big Spider-Man guy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've hit on Spider-Man a lot lately, and we're going to hit on him a lot more, so I feel like we don't really need to get too much into the nitty-gritty of who Spider-Man is. So instead, we'll probably talk more about the movie here. This is easily one of the better of the pre-MCU Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, I think it's the best of like the five that came before Tom Holland. This is the best of those.
I know, I was so excited for the one that came after this because of Venom, and then, you know, obviously let down.
Yeah, I think the same goes for the game as well. I was more excited for the Spider-Man 3 game because of the Spider-Man 2 game than I was excited for the Spider-Man 3 movie because of the Spider-Man 2 movie. And both Spider-Man 3 properties were incredibly disappointing.
And then I just never got around to the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies, and from what I hear, I'm not really missing too much.
I liked him as Peter, but the movies are quite flawed. I prefer him as Peter to Tobey Maguire. Like, I'm not a massive fan of this trilogy. I like this one because I think it's got a lot of stuff happening around Spider-Man that I like. But I'm not a massive fan of his portrayal of Peter Parker. So I prefer Andrew Garfield. That's really the highlight of those movies.
No, in this one of the big things I am a fan of is how much Peter is actually in the movie doing things that are important.
Mm-hmm.
Like going around and trying to hide the fact that he's Spider-Man from his friends and getting real close to telling them but not actually doing it is really one of the big things that I like about Spider-Man.
Yeah. When I think about this film, like aside from Dr. Octopus, one of the big things I think of is the pizza delivery scene, which feels very Peter Parker without actually adapting anything straight from the comics. It feels very true to the spirit of Peter.
And then you can't really get away from the Doc Ock scene at all. That's really, when I talk to people who aren't into comics or really aren't into Spider-Man, Doc Ock is somebody who they know about anyway.
Yeah. And Dr. Octopus is probably he's not my favourite Spider-Man villain because I'm a big fan of The Spot, but he's my favourite of like the people who are arguably Spider-Man's greatest enemy. So if you're talking Green Goblin, Doc Ock, Venom, etc., Doc Ock's my favourite of like the A-list.
And just his portrayal in this movie, the way that all those arms are attached to him, and I mean, at least for the time, look really good.
Yeah, it's a really, really good portrayal by Alfred Molina. It's kind of sympathetic in the way that you see who he is before he becomes Dr. Octopus. And like, he's not like Norman Osborn in the first film, who was always kind of a dick. He's a lot nicer. He's got a wife who he really cares for. He genuinely wants to like help mankind with his science. And then like, he flies too close to the sun and gets like, it's almost like the arms take over him because that like inhibitor chip thing like burns and breaks, and he becomes a nasty man.
And I'm really just a fan of all these villains where, yeah, they're bad, but you can understand why they did it.
I actually think one of the best villain portrayals in a movie, in a superhero movie, is the Sandman in Spider-Man 3. I thought they did a really good job with the effects and with the portrayal and with like the motives. That was, I think that's a really, really underrated villain in like the larger like superhero movie genre. And like, I feel like this trilogy is kind of hit and miss for me with villains, because I like Sandman, I like Doc Ock. Norman Osborn's okay. I like Harry when he's a bastard in Spider-Man 3, but when he actually becomes the Goblin, he's not that interesting. And Venom's portrayal in Spider-Man 3, that's a whole other discussion that we could spend an hour on.
Venom, I like to pretend never happened, because if you take him out of Spider-Man 3, just the Sandman plot is such a much better movie.
Mm-hmm.
But Spider-Man 2, for those who don't know, Mary Jane finds out he's Spider-Man, decides she likes him enough anyway, she's going to stay with him. Harry finds out that he's Spider-Man, and then gets all pissy, because he's convinced that Spider-Man killed his dad. It's just a lot of wonderful Spider-Man-y moments.
Yeah, to be fair, though, like, at the end of Spider-Man 1, why did Spider-Man take Norman Osborn back to his apartment rather than, like, a hospital or something? Because at the end of Spider-Man 1, like, Harry catches Spider-Man, like, laying Osborn down in the bed. It's like, where does Harry think those stab wounds came from?
I don't know. I've always thought that he was trying to get him there and then make a call to 911 or something, because there would be no other reason for Norman to be out in the world anywhere else.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of, like, I don't want Harry to find out his dad was like this.
And it's a horrible way to find out, really, too. One of your local heroes is bringing your stabbed-up dad back to the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't blame Harry at all for hating Spider-Man. And then likewise, I can't blame Harry at all for really hating on Peter when he finds out that Peter is Spider-Man. Because on top of what he thinks he did, his friend was hiding everything from him.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we've not talked about with these films is the absolute best part of the trilogy, which is J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh, easily. I can't read Spider-Man anymore without hearing his voice doing J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah, and I really like that he still does it for like cartoons and other video games and stuff. It's a role that he seems to enjoy playing. And I don't think anyone would be mad if he just showed up in like Spider-Man Homecoming 2 as Jonah. Everyone would just be fine with that.
Probably the only character that I'd be cool coming over from either of the older franchises.
Mm-hmm. Although a friend of mine had a really good casting idea for J. Jonah Jameson in the new films, and they said that it should be Jason Mantzoukas.
Oh, that would be insane in all the right ways.
Yeah, I would love that.
And I've never really understood, too, why Aunt May didn't realize he was Spider-Man, or at least that he was out running around doing stuff.
Yeah, this trilogy's Aunt May is definitely the most faithful to, like, Lee and Ditko, because if you've read those like early like first like 30 odd issues of Spider-Man, she's so old and she's so frail, and she's constantly like on death's door just from stress. And this May is very close to that. She's not as sickly, but she's very much portrayed as like almost like too old to do anything. Whereas the later films have kind of like, she was younger in Amazing Spider-Man, and then like, she's hot in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Which might have been a little too far in the other direction.
I was okay with it. It works for those films. I like Tony teasing Peter about having a hot aunt, and I think it gives them a chance to like relate closer than the other two franchises.
I do really like the actual high school Spider-Man, though, in Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jumping in with college-age Spider-Man is just a little bit weird.
Yeah, like both films, like the Tobey Maguire stuff and the Andrew Garfield stuff, there's very much a sense of, we want to start in high school, but we will, like, shove him out the door towards college immediately because we can't build, like, a franchise around this because he's already, like, 25.
And Tom Holland just does such a wonderful job in this new one, being Spider-Man and being Peter Parker. I think he's got both of those characters down beautifully.
Yeah, Homecoming is probably my favorite superhero film. I like, there's films that I can recognize are better. Like, I think, like, Thor Ragnarok is better. I think Black Panther is better. But Spider-Man Homecoming just made me so happy in, like, such an indescribable way that's my favorite. And that's, like, 90% down to Tom Holland.
The way he was going on in Avengers Infinity War as well, just being that little PG-rated Deadpool attitude of joking around the whole time, but knowing when to take things seriously, is just great compared to all the other characters.
Yeah, he's a really good, like, fly in the ointment kind of. He's not making things worse, but he's not making things easier by him being there. Because Tony's got, like, that paternal thing with him.
And then the introduction of John Jameson as well in this movie, I really enjoy that. I wish they had kind of gone a little bit further with his character development, but I also realize there's only so much room that they have to do this in.
Yeah, and a lot of the problem with Spider-Man 3 is that they tried too much. Like, I think that a lot of us would, like, be super jazzed to see, like, Star God in a Spider-Man film, but I don't think we ever need to see that.
But it would be so cool if we did.
It would be so cool.
You know, I've always liked Kirsten Dunst as that Mary Jane character in there. Although I'm really excited to see what they're going to be doing with it in the newer Spider-Man stuff as well.
Yeah. I like Kirsten Dunst. I've not revisited those films in a long time. And I feel like a lot of my opinions on a lot of characters from that time are kind of coloured by, like, a teenage misogyny that I've grown out of. So there's a point where there's, like, oh, no, like, she wasn't that good in it. I'm like, well, was she not good in it? Or was I just, like, a little, like, shithead back then? So I think it's the kind of performance that I'd need to, like, go revisit as a more well-rounded adult.
I mean, it definitely wasn't acted, like, Oscar-worthy or anything, but I felt like it fit the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wish we'd gotten more Doc Connor stuff, but again, you don't need Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. And, like, there is a film with the Lizard, and it wasn't great. So, and I always felt like, I'm not sure who played Doc Connors, but I always felt like he's not going to be the main villain in a film, because they're going to cast, like, someone you know. They're not going to be like, okay, and now this side character from the first two or three films is going to be, like, the only way I could see them doing the Lizard in that franchise is if it was part of the Sinister Six, because they'd want, like, bigger name actors to kind of anchor the film alongside Tobey Maguire.
Oh, that would have been so cool. So hopefully Marvel can get a hold of that and do something good with it, since they've got most of the Marvel universe to play with now.
Yeah. I have seen, like, the rumors for Homecoming 2 or whatever it's going to be called, and it seems that they're still trying to build up to the Sinister Six as a thing they can do a movie around in one way or another. Because you had, like, Scorpion at the end of Homecoming, and there's rumors that Michael Keaton's going to be in the second one as well.
And just the fact that the Vulture is supposed to be an old man anyway, you can keep Michael Keaton for a while and be fine.
Yeah, that's true.
He did a great job in Homecoming.
Yeah, like, I like characters that are kind of for the working man and kind of taking away from, like, your Tony Starks or your Elon Musks. So I definitely had a lot of sympathy for Vulture throughout that.
So, anything else you feel like we need to talk about with this movie or Spider-Man in general before we move on to the game?
I don't think so. Like, I like the game a lot more than the movie, so I'll have a lot more to talk about there. I like the villain fights, like the villains that aren't in the movie. Like, my favourite boss battle ever is in Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game. So I'm excited to talk about that. But yeah, I'm a much, much bigger fan of the game than I am of the movie.
And I'm excited to hear about it, because there's one little flaw that really kept me from enjoying it. We'll hear about that after we drop a promo for another episode.
Hey guys, I'm Paul Combs.
And I'm Joseph Collins.
And we're the host of the CNC Geekcast,
the only podcast where two guys with speech impediments talk about movies.
We talk about old movies, we talk about new movies, and kind of everything in between.
Is there anything we don't cover?
Nope.
Oh my goodness, this is an incredible show. Where can they find us?
CNCGeekcast.podbean.com, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Is there a place we're not located on?
No.
Okay, what, is there a specific day we come on?
Every Tuesday.
Oh my goodness, I should have known all this.
You should have.
So join us on the CNC Geekcast.
That was a good show too that you should go check out. But let's finish up this one first. So Kieran, I went to pull this game off my shelf to play it. I popped it in, I picked it up at the flea market not too long ago. Got to the beginning of chapter 2 and it scratched up and I just couldn't go any further with it.
Heartbreaking. It's, I wish you had a chance to like really dive into it, because there's so much to love. Like, I think it really holds up. Like, so much of it is like, so much of it doesn't hold up. Like the combat's really bad, and a lot of like the civilian events are really repetitive. But even still, that's stuff that like I'm really nostalgic about. Like, I wouldn't want to do that in a modern game, but if I put Spider-Man 2 in, I'm really excited to do all that stuff.
And I was really excited to play this one, because from what I hear, it is the best web swinging experience pretty much in any Spider-Man game.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's a game that I revisited a lot and I still revisit just to kind of like zen out, like kind of center myself, because I'll just pop it in and then just swing around this like fictionalized New York, and it's just so calming. And like, when I was a teenager, I was kind of like an angry teenager, like a lot of like bubbling hormones and nothing to do with them. And like very much like, I hate you, Dad, kind of thing. So a lot of the time, if I needed to calm myself down, I'd put this on and just swing around, and it would really just like lower my temper and really like center me in a way that I needed. And it's still just like a really like peaceful game for me to play. Like, not doing any of the levels or the missions, just swinging around, like running across walls, bouncing into like a combo. It's just really, really peaceful and relaxing.
See, now you just make me want to go out and buy another copy.
What you might be able to do, I don't know if this will work for you, if you start a new game, there's a cheat code that skips you to like 40% like complete or something like that. So it might skip over the scratched part.
Okay, I'll have to try that, because from all the gameplay videos I went and had to watch instead of playing this one, it looks like I'd really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a code where it, because I, a lot of the time, if I start like a new game, I'll do that just so I have like all the upgrades I want, because when you're used to swinging at like the upgraded speed that you get halfway through the game, it's really frustrating to start at like the slowest level speed and the lowest number of combos. So there is a cheat.
Cool. So you said the combat was bad in this. Is it like your standard PS2, early PS2 era bad combat that everything was, or is it just bad when it came out as well?
It was like, it's fine, but it's just very much like punch, kick, punch, kick. Like, no real targeting system. Like, it's got some good web-based combat, I think. Like webbing people towards you and like knocking them into the air, or like doing kind of like a Hulk Loki kind of pendulum smash. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Yeah.
But like with webs, and you can like hang them off lampposts and stuff. So there's a lot you can do with the webs, but the actual like punch kick mechanics it's more like a Vice City level of depth, which is very, very shallow.
Okay. And I mean, I never got good at the super combo filled up games anyway, so this should be right up my alley then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how closely does this one stick to the movie? I know movie games are a little weird on that aspect of potentially having the whole plot known about before you start.
If I remember correctly, it sticks quite close to the movie, obviously. Like, it's expanded significantly because there's more to do. But, like, there's the fight on the train with Doc Ock, there's the fight in the warehouse with Doc Ock. There's, like, you go and you visit his, like his office near Central Park. There's stuff where you need to, like, get to Empire State University on time. There's, like, you can go to the Daily Bugle and, like, change into Peter Parker and just, like, wander around the Bugle and, like, talk to Betty and talk to Jonah. There's, like, pizza delivery side quests. So yeah, I think it sticks quite close to the film, having not seen the film in a while.
Really, what are your favorite parts of it?
My favorite part of the game, I mentioned this before the break, is there's a Mysterio is in it as a recurring boss. And each time you face him, you have to go through like trials or like games or whatever. So there's like the one that I remember is there's a bit in like there's a bit where he takes over Madison Square Garden and you basically have to like have a contest against him, like who can destroy these robots the fastest and stuff like that. And then he comes back again and he's got like another like thing up his sleeve that he needs to complete. And then he shows up for a third time robbing like a convenience store, and like a boss battle initiates. And his health bar comes up and like it fills up all the way in like red, then it fills up all the way in yellow, then it fills up all the way in green. So you're like, holy crap, Mysterio's got like so much health. And it plays with like your idea of like what boss battles are. But then you're like, okay, how am I gonna do this? Well, I guess I'll punch him. And you punch him once and the boss battle's over because he's just a dude in a fishbowl.
Oh, that's cool.
So, like, he uses his powers to, like, set himself up as, like, this big, like, end boss bad guy that you're never going to take down, or it's going to take, like, an hour to wear him down. But it was all an illusion, both to Spider-Man and to you, the player, and just one punch, and he's down. I love that so much. It was one of those first moments of, like, realizing that you can subvert expectations in a video game in really cool and interesting ways.
This just sounds like such a cool game that I wish I could have been able to play. This is probably the first episode where I haven't gone and played the game. Because I'm not going to consider that 5 minutes I was able to play it, actually playing it.
Mm-hmm. There's, well, this is really good. Like, people will say, like, one of the weak, like, when people talk about Spider-Man 2, they'll make fun of it, especially for, there's, like, civilian events, so, like, there's a mugging or there's like a car that's like speeding or something, so you'll have to intervene. One of the civilian events is a little kid who's lost his balloon. So you, and it's almost a meme because you'll be swinging around and you'll just hear, "My balloon!" And then you'll notice on like your mini map that there's like a civilian event. So basically you have to like race this balloon up like a building or whatever. You've got to find a way to grab the balloon and bring it back to the kid. But I always love that. It's so much fun to be like, okay, how am I going to get there? Like sometimes it'll be like bumped up against a building as it's floating, so you can just like run up the building and grab it. But sometimes you'll be like, okay, I'm going to need to swing here, here, and here, get some momentum, and like aim myself just right and grab it. And if I don't do it this time, it's gone. And it's become a bit of a meme just because like the kid shouting "my balloon" is like a really like snotty, annoying kid. but it's just such a fun, like, mechanic. There's other civilian events where there'll be, like a construction guy or, like, a window washer or something, like, hanging off the edge of a building. So you'll have to, like, get to him before he falls, grab him, and then, like, rush him to the hospital before, like, a timer runs out. Like, that's always really fun. When you take down, like, the speeding cars, you'll, like, land on top of the car, and you, like, it's really simple. You just, like, punch, 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 dodge, punch, punch, punch. Like, the spider-sense stuff in it's really good. Like, everything about it is just, I love it. I've got so much affection for this game that even the stuff that people rag on, like, I really enjoy. There's, like, I think, like, one of the first boss battles is against the Rhino, where you have to use your spider sense a lot because it's all about, like, dodging him and stuff. And, like, he'll pick up, like, I can't remember what it is. It's like a street lamp or something. And he'll swing it around. Like, he'll just, like, swing it in circles, like, five times. And you've got to, like, hit circle to dodge at the right time every time. And it's just really, like, no two boss battles are the same. Everything is different. I can't remember who the other bosses are. I think there's some Black Cat stuff where you have to, like, chase Black Cat across the rooftops. There's Mysterio, there's the Rhino, there's Doc Ock, obviously. I can't remember if the Shocker is in this or if he's in the first one.
He's at least in this one. Just from looking at Wikipedia pages and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shocker's in this. I think it's where you're, like, in the subway or something. There's an FAQ on IGN where it says the boss battles are Rhino, Doc Ock at the bank, Shocker at the warehouse, Shocker second time, Doc Ock on the train, final battle. There's Mysterio as well, who's, like, more of a annoyance than a boss. And I'm pretty sure there's Black Cat stuff in this as well. But it's, like I say, like, when I play it these days, I play it more to just, like, swing around and just, like, center myself. But yeah, there's Black Cat stuff in it where you kind of have to, like, chase her from, like, rooftop to rooftop. There's, like, one of the weird things about it is anytime there's graffiti, like, it's for whichever Distillers album came out that year. I don't know if someone's just, like, a fan or if there was, like, maybe Distillers were signed to Sony or something. But all of the graffiti in the game is about the Distillers.
Oh, that's cool. And they're a good band anyway, so that's a real nice mm-hmm. Easter egg.
One of my favourite things is you can go to the Statue of Liberty, but the only way to get there is you have to, like, go to, like, the very bottom of the map, wait for a helicopter to come close, jump, grab onto the helicopter with your web, just stay there for, like, 30 seconds, and then the helicopter doesn't take you all the way. The helicopter goes half of the way there before it turns back, but then another helicopter, like, passes it. So you have to, like, switch helicopters over, like, the water, and, like, if you miss, you hit the water and it sends you back to, like, mainland Manhattan.
Oh, that's cool.
You can get to the Statue of Liberty, and you can, like, climb it and jump off it, and there's a lot of collectibles. There's, like, these, like, skyscraper collectibles that you can find on, like, the Statue of Liberty and the Empire State Building and, like, the MetLife Building or whatever it was called back then. It's really fun to dive off the Empire State Building and, like, because that's, like, the tallest monument in the game. So you can climb to the very, very, very top of, like, the antenna on it and then jump off. And then, like, I imagine a lot of people did this. What I'd always do is, like, try and see, like, how close to the ground I could get before I hit, like, the web button and, like, swing away.
Oh, I know I do a cool that Easter egg. Spider-Man game, I can.
Mm-hmm. There's a really cool Easter egg at the, not the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building. The one that was, like, Kingpin's base in the cartoon. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you go to there, on one of the, like, gargoyles, there's some green feathers. Because in Spider-Man 1, that's where you fight the Vulture.
Oh, that's a nice little throwback.
Yeah, it's just a nice little touch. So, yeah, there's a lot of this. There's like a tribute to like 9/11 in the game. Like you can go to Ground Zero, but if you go there, there's just like two sets of like spotlights, like shining like directly up where the towers were. Like the New York of Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game, is so well realized. Like it's a much smaller scale, obviously. But like having been to New York a couple of times, like it feels right. Like there's Times Square, and like obviously it's like so much smaller than Times Square is. We can go to Times Square. You can go to the Flatiron where the Daily Bugle is. You can go inside as Peter. You can like go to Peter's apartment, and you can go to Mary Jane's apartment, and you can go to Doc Ock's lab, and you can go to Empire State University. It's just, it's one of the, like the best realized maps in like a sandbox game.
So it sounds like this game just gets tons of things right, from feeling like the movie anyway to just having the general feel of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, it just feels like Spider-Man. It's the most, like, even more than like the Arkham games make you feel like Batman. Like, Spider-Man 2 captures like that feeling of what it would be like to be this character better than like any other comic book game, in my opinion. I feel bad because I feel like I'm just saying like this is all this stuff that you're missing out on because your disc is broken.
I mean, it's okay. It's given me a lot of things to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send you that cheat code. I'm one of those weird people that doesn't mind spoilers in games.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much in there. Like, I'm thinking of getting the PS2 and hooking it up when I get off this call, because I really want to revisit it. I'm really looking forward to this year's Spider-Man game, because I think it's going to be a contender to be better. Everything I've seen of it looks fantastic, so I've got high hopes. But again, I had high hopes for Spider-Man 3, the movie, the game, and that was real bad.
Well, if there is anything, what do you think this game kind of gets wrong?
Like I said, like the combat, it took a long time for Spider-Man games to get the to get combat like properly right. I think Web of Shadows was the first one that had like combat that you could praise rather than combat that was flawed. So the combat's probably the worst part of it. Like graphically, like it doesn't hold up at all today. It didn't really back then. It wasn't like the most visually stunning game of like 2004. But yeah, I like definitely think I'm looking at it through like rose colored glasses, to the point where like, I'm not sure I can objectively say what the bad parts of it are.
Yeah, and like 2004, 2005, right in there are kind of the end of that really figuring out 3D and how you can make all that kind of stuff work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that that were trying to look realistic, I don't think ever really hold up.
Yeah, it's very like blocky and like sharp polygon look to it, which does not stand the test of time, as well as like some of the more cartoony games of the age.
So just in general, if you had somebody who, I probably know the answer to this already, but if you had somebody who didn't know about Spider-Man, would you hand them this game and say, here, take this, yeah, as an 100%. Intro to Spider-Man?
Yeah, 100%. It's everything that you need to know about Spider-Man. It's got some of his like most iconic villains. It's got Mary Jane. It's got Harry. It's got the plot of the movie, basically. Like, I'd say like play the game rather than watch the movie. But that's like, again, me with like those nostalgia glasses looking back at it. But yeah, absolutely. Like, this is like the Spider-Man experience.
Well, that's some high praise for when I finally get around to playing it. This is going to be so awesome when I can do it, though.
You'll have to let me know, like send me a DM or something if you get it to work.
Oh, I definitely will. So, Kieran, thanks for coming on. If people like hearing you, where can they find you around the internet?
I'm on Twitter at KingImpulse, which is where you can find me all of the time. I write for Comic Book Resources and Polygon and occasionally The Guardian, so you can find me at those places, or you can just find me there through Twitter, which is the easiest way. I have a lot of podcasts, which you can find all of them at Good Egg Podcasts, which is kind of like the umbrella banner of what myself and my fiance Helena do. So the main one is Journey into Misery, which is a complicated continuity podcast where I explain like the most bizarre stuff to Helena and she reacts with horror most of the time. There's Zero Hour, which is like a interview show, I guess. It's all about people's like personal histories with comics. So I've talked to a lot of comic creators on that. I've got some more episodes coming up that are going to be really, really good. And there's Under the Hood, which is a podcast that I co-host with Hassan Osman Elhau, where we go through Watchmen one page at a time. And we're about halfway through issue one at the moment, hoping to record some more episodes soon. But yeah, all of those can be found at goodeggpodcasts.com.
And being somebody who's listened to Kieran for a while, I can tell you that all of his podcasts are really worth listening to. So definitely go check it out.
Thank you. That sometimes it still feels like you just, and I imagine you get this sense of, like, imagine all podcasters get this sense of like you're just like throwing these things out into the void. So it's always really, really nice when people say like, oh no, I genuinely really like what you do.
Well, hopefully we can have you on again for something, because I've had a great time talking to you here, and it's always nice hearing you. Even better now when I can talk back.
Yeah, we did it. We did have some issues with the recording software, but it's all good. I've had a great time. I'm happy to come back to talk about anything that came out like after 2000, because my memory pretty much starts there.
Well, we'll definitely get Kieran back. But first, we're going to drop a promo for another show, and then I'll come back and close things out.
Quiz time. Who's got four legs, an opposable tail, and fans all over the world? It's Scooby-Doo, our favorite whipper. Join me and my guests on the Meddling Kids podcast for an irreverent review of Scooby-Doo. It's family-friendly, although there is occasional talk about hot villains. Join me, Julie Kinn, every Monday on the Meddling Kids podcast.
A big thanks again to Kieran for taking the time to come on the show. Really love talking to him, and I'm looking forward to when we can get him back on again. Also, thank you to Derek Graziano of Sometimes Geek for that sweet little intro drop, and to CNC Geekcast and Meddling Kids for the promos we dropped in today's episodes. This show is part of the Brain Trust Network. You can hear other wonderful shows such as Oh No Lit Class, Life, Death, and Taxonomy. There might be Cupcakes, Field of Screams. There are tons of shows to check out. If you like this one, though, then go tell all your friends, be it through word of mouth, stapling it to their wall, or, you know, leaving a review on iTunes, all the old school stuff like that. Music is, of course, by Best Day. You can check him out at soundcloud.com/best-day. It's totally worth checking out. Other than that, grab a stack of comics, grab a game, and go find yourself a new favorite character. This podcast is brought to you in part by the Brain Trust Brothers Network. For more information about this podcast or others, visit braintrustbros.com. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, we're definitely going to pop in and say, no, the real answer is The Incredibles.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the movie coming out.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this film. It's not coming out for like a month after it comes out in America, which is really annoying.
Oh, that sucks.
It's because like we've got, because like the World Cup is like a massive deal. So mm-hmm. like no one's releasing any films during the World Cup.
Man. I'd completely forgotten that was happening this year.
Yeah.
Because starts, as like, usual, next week, we screwed up.
Okay, I'm gonna hit stop recording so it can like okay. do its thing.